Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
If you or a loved one have been a victim of domestic violence, help is available. Speak with someone today. You can contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Available in English, Spanish, and over 200 languages through Interpretation Service. You can dial them at 1-800-799-7233. Again, that's 1-800-799-7233. Or text BEGIN, that's BEGIN, to 88788. WWE Universe, the D-Loop Podcast is now a brand affiliate of WWE Shop with Fanatics. Get all of your latest merchandise from your favorite WWE superstars and wear them proud. So if it's CM Punk, the American Nightmare Cody Rhodes, L.A. Knight, the Tribal Chief Roman Reigns, or legends like The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Bret the Hitman Hart, again, you can get all of your favorite merchandise over at wrestling.thedlupodcast.com. Again, that's wrestling.thedlupodcast.com to get all of your favorite merchandise at WWE Shop with Fanatics. This podcast is a Believe Network and Luciete production. Welcome to another edition of the D-Loop Podcast, brought to you by Believe Network. I'm your host, Derek T. Lewis, and I'm going to get right to this episode now. You know, Mark Raimondi, you know, this man has done it all. You know, he's covered, you know, multiple sports through quite a few media outlets, you know, such as SNY, USA Today, MMAFighting.com, Fox Sports, the New York Post, and he's now covering the Atlanta Falcons as a part of ESPN. But he's also, you know, covered the world of professional wrestling over the years. About 3 years ago, he was tapped on the shoulder by Simon & Schuster, a huge publishing company, and they wanted someone to write about, you know, the NWO. You know, for those that know, you know, the NWO, the New World Order, was probably one of the biggest storylines in the history of professional wrestling that took place, you know, in 1996, you know, in a company called WCW, World Championship Wrestling. But he's written a book, he's finally finished it, and it'll be available everywhere in March of 2025, and it's called Say Hello to the Bad Guys: How Pro Wrestling's New World Order Changed America. You know, we talk about, you know, the research he did and just the process of putting this whole masterpiece together. And let's not wait any longer. My interview with Mark Raimondi starts right now. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce a man who is currently the beat writer with ESPN for the 2016 NFC champion Atlanta Falcons. And he is the author of the book that'll be released in March of 2025 called Say Hello to the Bad Guys: How Professional Wrestling's New World Order Changed America, the one and only Mark Raimondi. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
My pleasure, Derek. I am doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. You know, when I first got wind of the book, you know, on the old Twitter machine slash X, whatever you want to call it, you know, having, I don't want to say grew up, because I was almost 18 years old when the formation of the NWO took place in 1996. But to have another perspective that's non-WWE or non-WCW, but somebody that, you know, is a wrestling fan that was that knew about it. And I wanted someone else's perspective, because we've seen, you know, obviously we have Eric Bischoff's 83 Weeks podcast. You know, there's so many, you know, obviously Kevin Nash has his podcast, and there's been so many stories has been told on numerous WWE platforms. So it's good to get another insight, on this. So I'm definitely glad. And we'll talk about the book in just a second, but I just want to talk about first Mark Romani, the human being, the man. Growing up across the I grew up in Newark, New Jersey originally. So you grew up not too far from me in good old Queens, New York. So talk about growing up in Queens.
Gosh, growing up in Queens, I think I always say that I feel very lucky because I grew up in the most diverse place in the country, right? Maybe the world, right? There was Queens has everything. It has every kind of person, every kind of culture, and I grew up with that, and a lot of people have not. And I feel like that's a big advantage for me, and I feel like I want to live places and be in places that are diverse and that have a lot of different cultures in it. Just moved to Atlanta, so I'm starting to assimilate into what the culture is here in Atlanta, and so far I'm really liking it. But that was Queens to me. Queens is a melting pot. Queens is I had friends from all over. I had friends of every nationality, of ethnicity, race, gender, what have you. And that was kind of Queens to me, and good food. I grew up in an Italian American family, and we had Sundays every day at my grandparents' place. The pasta with the red sauce. The whole thing, the Italian bread, the whole deal. So that was kind of my life. Very, very middle class. Like my grandfather was an Italian immigrant, and he was a gardener. He was a landscaper, and then he ended up owning his own landscaping company. So sort of just kind of like your regular run of the mill middle class life.
That's amazing to hear. And I mean, like I said, I grew up, across the, across from you in Jersey. And it's like, it's the same type of vibe, you know what I mean? In regards to how it was growing up in the era that you and I grew up in. You know what I mean? Everyone was kind of sticking together and stuff like that. So I totally get that. When was it that you became a wrestling fan, and what promotions were you kind of latched onto?
Yeah, so I became a fan. My earliest memories of being a wrestling fan were like WrestleMania in 1990, Hulk Hogan against the Ultimate Warrior. Now,
WrestleMania
I think
six.
exactly WrestleMania 6, and I feel like I was probably a fan before that. That's what I remember. Like, I still have vivid memories of watching WrestleMania 6, and I was a big Ultimate Warrior fan, and that hasn't aged too well, unfortunately. But I remember getting the wrestling magazines, and I would go to the bodega, as we call it in New York. I would go to the corner store in Queens, on 192nd Street in Queens, and Union Turnpike, and I would pick up every professional wrestling magazine that I could get. Every time there was a store that had a magazine section, I would bolt right over to the magazine section and see what wrestling magazines were out there. So I got everything, and I tried to learn as much about wrestling as I could, even from a young age, because WrestleMania 6 was in 90, and I was only six. I was five. I turned six that year. I was born in 84, so I was pretty young when I first kind of got into it. And being from the Northeast, being from New York, obviously I was a WWF guy, because that was the thing that would be most prominent where I was. Superstars on Saturday morning was a weekly staple. Eventually, as I got older and I found out there was other wrestling, and I don't remember exactly how, maybe I was just flipping through the channels and I saw TBS, and that's how I started watching WCW, probably like in also the early 90s, because I remember seeing like Brian Pillman and Jushin Liger and guys like that. Some of the coolest things that I had seen as a fan. I was like, this is so different from the WWF. So those are kind of like my early memories. And one of my most vivid memories of wrestling was the incident, the angle with Jake the Snake Roberts and Damien and the Snake, and the Snake bit Macho Man Randy Savage when he was tied up in the ropes. And I remember
Oh,
this.
yeah.
I remember this. This is in 1992, and I remember this. Maybe even late 91,
That
actually,
was
now that I think about it.
91. That
But
was 91.
yeah, late
Yeah.
91, and I'm this was just like the craziest thing to me. And I remember being in my basement in Queens and having an argument with my uncle about whether or not wrestling was real or not, because I was like, I had just seen this snake bite a man's arm. How can you fake that? That's real. And that's what I was saying. This is real. And he was like, no, whatever. Fast forward, a million years later, and he just my uncle just pre-ordered my book last week, so that's about wrestling. That's pretty crazy, right? I'm actually gonna text him and say and ask him if he remembers that conversation, but I still remember it vividly.
Yeah, that was a crazy story. And just to hear about how far Macho Man was willing to go to get that story off the ground, being that he were going to do the whole reinstatement storyline because he had just lost the career-ending match of the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 7. And of course, they were trying to, hey, how do we reinstate the Macho Man? And of course, Jake had that Cobra, latch onto him. And I'm just like, oh man, they're really going there. So I totally get it. And you talked about, going to the bodegas and going to going to the magazine. I too did the same. That was our internet back then.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, if you read the
100%.
aftermath, if you read the wrestler pro wrestling it, PWI, shout out to Bill Apter, who was a staple for all of our childhoods who were wrestling fans. I had an opportunity to meet him a few times, such an awesome guy. But you found out about more promotions than just the WWF. You found out obviously WCW, then you heard about the AWA, then you heard about the World Class Championship Wrestling, and
And
then of
Smoky
course
Mountain,
Smoky Mountain. Yeah, man, it was like the list goes on and on about all these I remember about reading about Pacific Northwest Wrestling back in the late 80s, and there was a guy named Scotty the Body who became Scotty Flamingo, who became Johnny Polo, who became Raven. So I was following those guys in the 80s of when they were very, very young, in their careers. So it's good to see, for a lot of you young fans that got the internet at your fingertips with a lot of, Fightful and PW Insider and all that. We had just magazines to go off of and to find out about shows months down the road. But after you graduated from St. John's University in your hometown of Queens, New York, you covered, sports as a part of, SNY and USA Today, MMAfighting.com, Fox Sports, the New York Post, and now you're covering the Atlanta Falcons as a part of the ESPN family. And again, congratulations to you on your move to Atlanta, and I wish you all the
Thanks, man.
best on that journey. Talk about, working for those media outlets and how it catapulted you for what you're doing today.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think I have always preached the idea of kind of building that foundation. And what I mean by that is my first job out of college was at a weekly newspaper in Queens, New York, and I was covering mainly high school sports, a little bit of college and a little bit of Mets here and there because it was in Queens, but it was really mainly a job covering high school sports. And I don't think I've covered anything harder than high school sports because that was the definition of DIY, right? You don't get, there is nothing given to you in high school sports. You have to do everything yourself. You have to get all your own interviews. You have to get your own, you have to take your own stats. I'm walking the sidelines, in the winter, football in Fort Hamilton, Brooklyn with, the wind coming off the water by the Verrazano Bridge, and it's freezing cold out. And I'm taking, I have my, I'm taking notes. And if you don't take those notes, you're not getting those stats. You're not getting that information. And that taught me a lot about kind of, do it yourself and being a self-starter and not having to rely on other people. And I feel like I've tried to keep that mentality as I've kind of moved up the ranks, so to speak. And I eventually started working at the New York Post, like you said, and I covered a little bit of everything there. Covered high schools at the start. Did some work in the office as a digital producer, as a an editor on the website. Covered some NFL games there. Covered Jets and Giants stuff. Covered the Giants for SNY. Covered the Mets for SNY. College basketball. I've done a bunch of stuff. I think I've done every sport you can imagine. From whether it be high school or college or pros, like. I've even written stories about cricket. I've written about everything that you could possibly imagine. So I really think that has helped me tremendously in being well-rounded and being versatile for what I'm doing now because I was able to go from covering combat sports, which I did for 11 years, and I was able to go over to the NFL team at ESPN, which I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity, by the editors there. And I've been received so greatly, honestly. The welcome has been great by the writers and the other reporters on the team. I just think that's really cool. I'm kind of like I'm living. I'm living my dream. I'm really living a dream. So I covered. I've been a combat sports fan my whole life too. I picked up MMA. I became a fan of MMA and the UFC because of pro wrestling. that Blockbuster video with my dad looking for some wrestling tapes, right? Some VHS.
Right.
Saw this thing called the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And my dad and I, we swore that it was wrestling. We thought it was wrestling. There's no way this could be real. So we brought it home. And that's how I developed my fandom for the UFC. And then I ended up covering that. You know, I've been an NFL fan for my whole life, New York Giants. Haven't been as much of a fan in the last few years, because I'm more of a journalist now. But, you know, and I've been a wrestling fan. So, I mean, I've wrote about the UFC for 11 years. I'm covering the Atlanta Falcons for ESPN, an NFL team. I mean, I that's ridiculous. And I'm running by the NWO. I mean, that's like, I can't even believe it. Like I'm saying, it's still surreal to me that I've gotten to do all of these things that, you know, 9-year-old Mark would be like, come on, this is no way. It's impossible.
Yeah, I hear you there, man, because and you, we'll talk about MMA in just a second, because even for me, you know, granted, you know, I have not traveled the roads that you have, and I'm not a journalist. I happen to have a podcast, and I get to cover things that I love, which is pro wrestling, music, film and television, things of that nature. I got to cover WrestleMania in LA last year. WWE is very gracious to me to grant me press credentials for the entire week, and I'll be forever indebted to them for giving me that opportunity to at least get a peek, you know, behind the curtain as far as what goes on in covering events. When it comes to MMA, you know, I found out about the UFC through, you know, through cable back in the day in when 93, 94. And of course, when Ken Shamrock came to the WWF in 97, it really shed light on the UFC. How much do you appreciate the leaps and bounds that MMA as a whole has taken over the last 20 to 25 years?
I mean, it's pretty crazy how far it's come, even since the time that I started writing about it and started covering it. Because I first started covering it for the New York Post in 2012. And I mean, it's a completely different sport now than it was then. The UFC is different now than it was then. It's a $1 billion industry. And, you know, they were successful in 2012 when I first started. But this is pre-Conor McGregor, pre-Ronda Rousey, pre-like that boom that made them mainstream. This was pre-Fox. You know, they were still on Spike TV at that time. So just to see, like, I feel very fortunate because I got to write about the UFC really in their formative years. I got to kind of see it from a period of time where, you know, they were doing well, but they were not mainstream. Two, you know, I covered all of Conor McGregor's big fights, right? You know, I covered all of Ronda Rousey's big fights, and, you know, I've covered all of Jon Jones's big fights, and I've covered Brock Lesnar. You know, I feel like I've, you know, I was very lucky to have seen that progression. And it's just crazy to me now to see, you know, a Conor McGregor shirt out like in the wild, and you know, UFC playing on TVs at bars that I'll go to, or restaurants that I'll go to. And really it's become something very much part of day-to-day life in the United States. And I don't think that, I mean, it was nowhere near that in 2012 when I first started covering it.
No, it wasn't. And I mean, granted, you know, for us, you know, MMA aficionados that actually watch the sport, you know, and understand, you know, all these different fighters from these different gyms, you know, America Top Team, Rufus Sport, shout out to Duke Rufus out in Milwaukee. You know, a lot of those are different, you know, of course you got Wink out in
Jackson Wink and
Jackson Wink out in, was it Arizona they're at?
Albuquerque,
New Mexico. Yeah. So it's like they're just following a lot of these gyms. I was doing that back then as far as seeing these upcoming fights. But I truly believe, and people can call me crazy, delusional, or just a big wrestling fan, but I think Brock Lesnar going to the UFC helped it become mainstream, because here was a guy, you know, who left. I was at WrestleMania 20, by the way, when he got booed out of the building because he said he was leaving after the match with Goldberg. You know, he tried the Vikings deal. And then, of course, you know, he starts going, you know, he starts doing MMA. And he made an impact, you know, like, you know, people could say whatever. Oh, he got the title fight in what, 3 or 4 fights, whatever it was.
Yep.
But he was a proven draw, and ultimately made them a lot of money. So I think now, you know, people have to understand Granted, we want to see the good fights and everything. That's great, but also there's also the business end of it too. Now you have a huge conglomerate like Endeavor, with the TKO group. There's gonna have to be they have to make those type of decisions. It's what's gonna be best for business in the at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you. I do think Brock Lesnar was a big part of, the steps that the UFC took to get mainstream, because after Brock Lesnar kind of came Ronda Rousey, after Ronda Rousey came Conor McGregor, and now it's on ESPN, and it's again, it's mainstream. And I think a lot of people didn't think that it would ever get there, but it got there in a relatively short amount of time, if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember the first Ultimate Fighter. And you know where I'm going. The fight that everyone was calling each other. It was like, do you see this fight going on? Was it Stephen Bonner? What? And was it Ryan Bader?
Forrest Griffin. Forrest
Forrest Griffin, my
Griffin.
bad. Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner. And we're just like, and Dana ended up giving them contracts. So it's like it was just something you thought you would never see, but thus, here we are. So I think it was just building blocks that the UFC was doing to be, definitely what it is today. Now, before, writing this book, and we're gonna segue into wrestling in just a bit, were there any pro wrestlers that you had an opportunity to interview?
Before the book or for the book?
Before the book.
Yeah, I mean, for ESPN, I did cover a little bit of wrestling. I wrote some features, and Cody Rhodes is a guy that I've interviewed a bunch of times. A very, very good guy. I interviewed a bunch of people like around WrestleManias, Seth Rollins, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, people like that. Interviewed Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio before WrestleMania a couple of years ago in LA, like you
LA,
mentioned. Gosh, that was last year. God, it feels like longer,
I
right?
know, right?
So I had the opportunity to interview a decent amount of wrestlers before doing the book, because through ESPN, because I was covering. ESPN doesn't cover a ton of professional wrestling, but enough. I did some AEW stories too. I did a big story on Jon Moxley when he went to rehab when he came out. Did a big story about that for ESPN. And of course, I did some stories about CM Punk that were a little bit controversial. So I've interviewed CM Punk a number of times as well, going back to his days in the UFC.
Nice. See, and that was another thing. Like, people can say what they want about Punk, and I'm a big Punk fan, and not many people could take that walk to the octagon. Not a lot of people could do that.
100%. 100%.
And the fact that he put in the work, it was just the fact that, you know what, it was just maybe 15 years too late. You know what I mean? And I think he realized it, but he appreciates his sport. He does the Cage Fury commentator, he
Yeah, he's
does,
good. He's good.
and understands the sport. And I think, hey man, if he can contribute in that way, hey, more power to him. So
100%.
now we're going to talk about, again, the topic here is the book, but we're going to talk about kind of a chronological a little bit, because the beginning days of the New World Order, the NWO, and we get talking about the book. In your estimation, when were you watching WCW like full-fledged at that time when it happened?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because
Absolutely.
all of this started, really, I'll never forget, I was watching Super Brawl 6. That was February of 96. And Gene
Okay.
Okerlund, he had the hotline, was at 1-900-909-9900. I didn't dial the number, guys, just letting you know. I didn't dial it. But he was talking about how two former World Wrestling Federation champions are making their way to WCW, and a lot of the dirt sheets and everything was talking about it being Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, formerly Razor Ramon and Diesel, making their way to WCW. Then, of course, we had the May 19th house show at Madison Square Garden and the infamous curtain call that happened when it was the end of a cage match with Shawn Michaels defending the championship against Diesel. Next thing you know, there's Triple H and there's Razor Ramon come making their way to the ring. They all hug and they're raising hands. Everyone's seen, the fan cam, and they're like, oh my God, because no one was really breaking kayfabe back then. That was a huge, huge no-no. You know what I mean? And it
Correct.
was just crazy to think about now in the world of WWE, in pro wrestling, where you see wrestlers babyface and heel hanging out all the time. But during that time, that was a huge no-no. So, and then of course, the following week on Nitro, was it Mike Enos that was in the match? It was just an enhancement match, and all of a sudden you saw Scott Hall making his way down in that infamous that jean vest, and cuts that promo. What were you thinking at that time? Young Mark at that time, like what the hell's going on?
Confusion, a lot of confusion, and I don't remember exactly what I was thinking. I was definitely watching, there's no doubt. I remember watching like the first Nitro in 1995. I actually have vivid memories of watching the first Nitro from the Mall of America because I was so excited. It was going to
When
be
Luger
another
showed
prime
up.
time, wrestling show. And I don't remember exactly what I was thinking when I watched Scott Hall, but I know that there was intrigue. I know there was intrigue, and I know that there was like, all right, what is going on here? What, like they got they, all right, I'm hooked. You got me for a few more weeks, because I was probably still at that point more of a WWF fan, just being from New York, right?
Right, makes sense.
But I was definitely watching both shows. I was addicted to this stuff. Like I was like obsessed with it.
Same
And
here. Yeah.
I remember, being very intrigued and being like, all right, this is something that has my attention.
Yeah, and I mean, the couple of weeks later, Nash shows up behind Bischoff, and they say, "We're not here to play." The measures is the chain around here. You're looking at, that promo. Then, of course, there's the Great American Bash that took place. Well, I believe it was in Baltimore, and of
It
course,
was in
they were
Baltimore.
trying to figure out who that third man was, and then of course they end up power bombing Bischoff through the stage, and I'm just like, whoa, whoa! I mean, it's to the most, the fan is like, the average fan is like, that stuff kind of, but for us, it's like, whoa, 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 whoa! They're crossing some boundaries that we've never seen before because they're asking, do you work for the WWF? And they said, no, we don't work there. So, in my mind, and again, we're all again. This is we're not there's no access to the back like it is now, so all we're seeing is everything that's on television, and we're like, oh, they're invading, or is Vince, because remember the billionaire Ted skits that was
Of
happening earlier
course,
that year.
yes.
So is this retaliation on for in WCW, and say, hey, you want to steal our stars, okay, cool, we're gonna, and it was working to make it think that WWF was looking to attack WCW stars for real, especially when you have Bischoff, who is not a professional wrestler at all, take that bump. Unbelievable.
That was rare because you didn't really see a lot of non-wrestlers or non-managers taking bumps like that in
Right.
1996 or
No.
before. That was an oddity. I mean, how many ring announcers took bumps before? I mean, how many play-by-play announcers took bumps like that
Not many.
before Bischoff did it? Was very rare. So yeah, that was something that definitely was on my radar. Like I definitely watched Great American Bash, and that was like, okay, they took it to the next level. Where does it go from here? What's next? What is going on here?
Right. And of course, that sets up the six-man tag at Bash at the Beach. And all you see there is just Hall and Nash. And we're like, who is the third man? And it's, everyone kept wondering who was the third man. Of course, there's I love hearing 83 weeks and with Conrad. Shout out to Conrad, the Podfather, doing the incredible things over at adfreeshows.com. Him and Bischoff had were talking about leading up to Bash at the Beach, and the rumor and innuendo of, I think it was Meltzer that put out that Mabel was supposed to be the third man. This is no disrespect to Nelson Frazier, God rest his soul, but just the mere fact of like it was all this speculation of who the third man was, and all of a sudden you see the red and yellow coming down. Now, no one ever thought, even in 1996, up until that point, that Hulk Hogan was going to turn heel. And my God, that leg drop heard around the world. I often wonder if social media was around in 1996, what would have happened? Because everybody was calling, I was calling my friends. I'm like, Hulk Hogan just turned bad. You know what I mean? I wasn't into the lingo and stuff back then, but it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I did exactly what you did. So I remember I was 11. I was still pretty young. And it was a Sunday, and the next day was Monday, and it was summer, and I
Right.
was going to a camp.
Right.
And I think maybe I was even like a counselor in training or something. I don't even
Okay.
I forget exactly. Or maybe I forget if I was a camper or a counselor at that point at 11. But what I do remember is everyone talking about this. I mean, everyone from the campers to the counselors. This was Bayside, Queens, New York, day camp, and the whole camp was talking. It was a buzz with the fact that Hulk Hogan turned bad. Like, what the hell just happened? You know, what is going on here? And these are early memories. Like, it's funny, and you know this as a wrestling fan, and these are the kind of things that I want to kind of come, you know, get across in the book too, is like, these are memories that kind of leave like a lasting impression on you as a human being, you know, not just as, you know, not just as a fan, but it's like, these are things that you remember that stick with you and stick in your mind, and they help shape you and form who you are as a person. And it seems like it's such a small thing, but like, I really, you know, I have that real visceral memory of being at camp that day and talking with people about Hulk Hogan turning. And it's like, I don't have a lot of memories from when I was 11 years old, but you know what? That's one of them. And that's a big deal. That's a real thing.
This episode of the D-Loop podcast is brought to you by Goalie Nutrition. As someone who's used Goalie for quite some time, I can tell you that they're not only very good, but they're very beneficial. My favorite are the Super Green Gummies. The Super Green Gummies are uniquely crafted with a spectrum of essential nutrients such as vitamins A, B12, folic acid, and theamine. It supports a healthy liver function, healthy nervous and immune system, digestive health, a boost to your metabolism, and overall health and well-being. There are no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or colors from artificial sources. They're vegan-friendly, gluten-free, and gelatin-free. All loyal listeners of the D-Loop podcast get a special 10% discount at checkout. Go to goalie.com, use promo code D-L-E-W. That's goalie.com, use promo code D-L-E-W.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Yeah, I was actually watching that pay-per-view with my grandmother, because my grandmother and my God rest my grandmother's soul, she also was very much into professional wrestling like my mom was. Nice. My mom kind of got to pull back after a while, but my grandmother was very much into it. My grandma, you want to talk about, she bought in. She was PO'd, man, of the fact that how could he do that? And this is the same woman in the 80s who would throw her shoes. Whenever Ric Flair was cutting a promo, she would do one or two things. She would either turn down the volume or throw the shoes at the TV because she couldn't stand them.
That's incredible.
But she was hooked. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the fact that everybody was talking about, even kids in my neighborhood, you know, my friends in my neighborhood, you know, we were all talking about it. Like that summer, we're like, what world are we living in right now that Hulk Hogan went to the dark side? You know what I mean? It was incredible. So, of course, you know, they're showing up and all this other stuff, but then they're doing those paid announcements. You know what I mean? And they're doing all these vignettes. It was something new. You know
It
what I
was so
mean?
different. It was
It
so
was.
different. Yeah.
It was shot in black and white, number one. That really kind of, it was like a lean in moment of like, what are they talking about? And it was just all these little tongue-in-cheek, comments that they were making of how they were going to really take over the world. Number one, going back to Batch at the Beach, when all the trash that was thrown in the ring when Hogan cut the promo. Naming the NWO, in your mind, what do you think led to them naming it that versus something else?
Gosh, it's one of the things that I wrote about quite extensively, especially like in the beginning and actually kind of really the whole run, is just that it was really flying by the seat of their pants. There was not a ton of real planning. I think Eric Bischoff had, an idea of what he was going to do with Hogan and then, well, Hall and Nash, and then Hogan once Hogan got on board with being the third man. I think he had a little bit of an idea of what he was going to do and then the vibe that he wanted it to be. But the name New World Order was, I mean, no one could really point to whose idea it was necessarily. So the stories that I've heard and from the reporting that I did, the first person that ever said New World Order on WCW programming, do you know who that was?
Hulk Hogan.
No, it wasn't. It was actually Larry Zbysko. On Nitro, 6 days before Bash at the Beach,
Ooh, I have to go back and
he
watch
said
that.
New World Order. He said, but he didn't. It was kind of more of a description than
Description,
actually naming
right?
the group. He
Taking
said, "This
over,
is like a
right?
New World Order, right?"
Right.
I went back and I watched over 500 hours of WCW
Okay.
for the book, to research the book, and because I wanted to know these little details, and that's a big one to me. So I asked Eric Bischoff about that, and he said that he remembers telling Hulk Hogan at Bash at the Beach backstage when they were going over the promo called the New World Order. And he said for years he did not give Larry Zbysko credit for it because he didn't realize that that's where he heard it. He felt like it was something that he came up with, but it turns out that Larry Zbysko was actually the guy who indirectly came up with the name.
It's almost like how Arn Anderson named the Four Horsemen, in a promo where he just literally said, "When you
Yeah.
read about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse," and he ultimately named them the Four Horsemen, which is still one of the most legendary groups of all time.
Course.
So let's talk about the book now. So let's talk about the process of when Simon and Schuster, first contacted you, and that whole, as far as approaching you about writing this book. How did it all go?
So I'm sitting in a hotel room. It's 2021. It's I think it was May, and I was in Houston, Texas. And there was a UFC fight that week, and I was there covering it. I think it was Michael Chandler versus Charles Oliveira, if I remember correctly. And
The Bronx.
yeah, so I'm there. It's like the Thursday, I think, of fight week, and I'm in my hotel room. I'm on my laptop, and I'm writing an article. And I get an email from an editor, for someone who says they're an editor, from Simon and Schuster, and they're asking me if I want to write a book about the NWO. And I had written about the NWO when they went in the UFC, when they went in the UFC, when they went in the WWE Hall of Fame in 2019. I wrote an article for ESPN about that, interviewed Kevin Nash, interviewed Hulk Hogan for that story. I guess this editor, shout out Yadon Israel, tremendous editor, tremendous guy, was a wrestling fan like us. From Brooklyn, from the New York, New Jersey area, like us. So he was coming into Simon and Schuster in 2021, and he wanted an NWO book because he knew the kind of power and the kind of cultural effect and impact that it's had. So I guess he went looking for who would be a good author for this book, and he found my article about the NWO going into the WWE Hall of Fame. And he read it, and he realized, like, I mean, I could have written like a 400 word story about this, right? I styled a little bit. I went off. I think I wrote like 2,000 words about this, which could have been like, a small blurb, right? And he noticed that. He was like, all right, this guy, he obviously has the knowledge and also the passion and the you know enthusiasm for this topic. So he just cold emailed me. I'm in Houston, Texas. And I think Derek, I think this is BS. I think this is like there's just no way, you know, it's
right.
Like,
too good to be true.
It's a weird time because like I just started traveling again after the pandemic. I think it was only like my second trip. And I was having some personal things going on at the time. I was going through a breakup. I wasn't even living in my apartment at that time. I was living with my parents for a brief amount of time. Mm-hmm. Weird time in my life. And I get this email and I'm like, ah, this can't be. This is not real. So I Googled him to see, like, all right, who is this person? Am I going to click a link and get like hacked or something? Like what's going on?
Right.
So I find out, I mean, I look him up and it's legit and email him back. And within a matter of minutes, we're on the phone together and we're talking and we're not just talking, but we're vibing. Like we're speaking each other's language, like right away. Mm-hmm. Like he's talking about the impact. I'm talking about how, you know, what it has meant, the significance, you know, because this is not just a wrestling book. You know, this is a cultural book. This is a pop culture book. And it's a sociology book, you know, in many ways. So we're talking about that, those aspects of it and kind of what wrestling is and kind of like my, you know, my feelings about what wrestling is and what wrestling can be and how wrestling is all around us. And he was like, all right, get a book agent, write a proposal and let's start this process. So I did that. It took me a while. I didn't get the book proposal in until like 2022 because I was very busy with, you know, my job at ESPN.
Right.
And the rest is history. I signed the deal with Simon & Schuster in 2022 and they gave me, you know, thankfully they gave me enough time to do all the work and also, you know, maintain my regular job as well. And, you know, here we are now. The manuscript has been done since December. The few things we got to figure, you know, we got to, you know, hammer out before it goes to production. But that's the whole process. It's been a hell of a three plus years now.
That's incredible, man. You know, sometimes, you know, when opportunity's knocking, what's the old expression? You know, you stay ready so you don't get ready. And I mean, mm-hmm. Clearly you've been ready for a very long time and doing all that you've been doing, you know, leading you up to this opportunity, you know, coming your way. And I mean, again, all the things you're passionate about, you know, being the fact that you guys are vibing on the phone immediately speaks mm-hmm. volumes. You know what I mean? The wrestling community could be a very dysfunctional community sometimes, but it's almost like, okay, nope, we can mess with each other, but nobody can mess with us. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of that ideology when it comes to the, you know, to the wrestling community.
For sure.
Now you mentioned Eric Bischoff, who was again the brainchild behind a lot of that era, you know, during that time. But talk about mm-hmm. the in-depth research that you did do, you know, for the book. You know, were there any other WCW, not only just talents, but you know, executives who provided insight on what that whole, you know, era was like during that time?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, first of all, like I said, I watched over 500 hours back, and mm-hmm. I read, you know, all of the newsletters from that time, the Dave Meltzer, and by the way, he did eventually have that Hogan was going to be the third man. It's right before it happened. The right. Mabel thing was, you know, the guy writes like 50,000 words a week. I don't know how the hell he does it. Honestly, he's a phenom, Dave Meltzer.
To this day, for 40 years, he's been doing it.
For longer than I've been alive. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, there's no one like him. So I did all that research and I interviewed almost 100 people. And, you know, some of them were people that didn't want their names to be put in the book, you know. Sure. But Eric Bischoff is the guy that I interviewed. I visited him in Wyoming. I sat with him for like an entire day. Awesome. And we, you know, just talking about the NWO for hours and hours and hours. And so many different people, you know, from producers to camera people to production assistants to directors to, you know, everyone that I could find who was there at that time. Obviously a lot of wrestlers as well, quite a few of those. So yeah, I mean, and also people that not just people who weren't there necessarily, but who were impacted by it in different communities, in different sectors, whether it be, you know, I talked to a Hollywood producer. I talked to a presidential candidate. I talked to sociologists. I talked to you know, people who are experts in their fields and other things. And that's how I don't want this to be just a wrestling book. I want this to be bigger than that, because I really do feel like the NWO has had a bigger effect than just on wrestling fans, even if they don't even realize it.
Yeah, it was life changing for a lot of people, mm-hmm. not just the talents, but I mean, just the thought process of we're gonna shake up the system and we're gonna do something our way. You know, the fact that they were trying to get their own television show, you know, NWO Saturday mm-hmm. Night. You know, like I said, those vignettes were top notch, chef's kiss. You know, being able mm-hmm. to really set the tone for what this was going to be. You know what I mean? Now, mm-hmm. with that, with a lot of those interviews and a lot of the in-depth research that you had to do, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced writing this book?
I mean, one of the biggest challenges was just honestly the time, you know, because I have a full-time job, and I had a full-time job at that time that's pretty demanding, you know, and it required a lot of travel. Mm-hmm. So I'm in a hotel room for a UFC fight week, and I'm on my laptop for 2 hours in the morning watching Nitro from 1997, you know, and then when I wrote the book, like, for pretty much half of last year I took and I wrote the book, and I'm trying to churn out as many words per week as I can, you know, while on the road, and while, you know, I really had to stay disciplined. The time management was a really big thing. And thankfully, the people in my life didn't want to strangle me too much, because I was, you know, working so much. Like, thank goodness for you know, my wife, Wendy. She's amazing and so supportive, because, I mean, you could see how closing yourself in the room for hours after work,
right,
could be not the most pleasing thing to a partner. But I've been very lucky to have also, you know, ESPN has been so understanding too, and I have to shout out, you know, my editors there, because they were so helpful, and I honestly didn't take a lot of time off necessarily, but when I did need to take a few hours here and there, they were very accommodating with me, and I didn't feel like my work at ESPN fell off, and I hope they would corroborate that too on that side of things. But yeah, that was the biggest thing, just the time management of it.
Yeah, and it really goes to show you, you know, at the end of the day, as far as how you're able to compartmentalize everything, you know, as far as what your workload and everything else, mm-hmm. and that just shows you, you know, and look at the opportunity that you have now, you know, working with the Atlanta Falcons, and again, congratulations on that move for sure. With the NWO, you know, there's the topic of cool heels. I was just listening to the master's class on Busted Open Radio. I listen to Busted Open mm-hmm. every day. Shout mm-hmm. out to Dave LaGreca and the crew there for doing amazing work, you know, as a hub for wrestling, for passionate wrestling fans. They listen to that show every day. But every Sunday they have a podcast. It's about 30 minutes long. And it's you know, him, you know, Dave, Tommy Dreamer, Mark Henry, and Bully Ray. And the topic was cool heels, and how the shades of gray happened in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the NWO should be the poster child of what cool heels were? Or do you think were there some cool heels that you saw when you were younger before the NWO? Or do you think that you hold the NWO at the top of the list of being cool heels?
Yeah, that's the cool heel. And that is a great question. And I do think there was definitely, let's put it this way. It was very complicated, because Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were the epitome of the cool heel. They were bad guys doing bad things, but they were so damn cool and charismatic and engaging that you couldn't help but root for them. You couldn't help but cheer them. Right. I mean, that's just the way it was. No matter the heinous thing they were doing with baseball bats or attacking people backstage, they were just too cool. I mean, they were just great at, you know, they were really just playing themselves in a sense, and they're just cool guys. But Hollywood Hogan was not really a cool heel.
No.
Hollywood Hogan was a real heel. Hollywood Hogan was the guy getting booed and the guy getting stuff thrown at him, and It was a complicated, complex group in that way because there were different reactions from fans to different people in the group. And you know, even if you go later on, like a Scott Steiner, like he was not a cool heel, Scott Steiner. He was very much a traditional heel. Him and Buff Bagwell and their whole shtick, like that was hated. That was obnoxious. People really hated it.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were not, you know, Sean Waltman was not, you know, although I know there's the whole X-Pac Heat thing, but at the time he was rolling with those guys. They were the Wolfpack.
Six-Pac, yeah, man.
Yeah, exactly. And they were super cool. And you did not want to root against them. But like the NWO t-shirt, right? It's cool. You know, they're the heels and they're outselling everybody. You know, it didn't happen very often. And I know that, you know, the Four Horsemen were heels and the Freebirds were heels and they were popular, right? They got cheered. But right. This was a national level with the most people watching wrestling on cable television ever. And they were front and center. So Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, the Outsiders, they're the epitome of cool heel. The group itself, it's a little bit more layered and complicated than that.
Yeah, and I mean, when I think, I was just at WrestleMania, you know, in Philly, not too far from where I live, and I was at WWE World, and they had all these posters of like all the champions in the past, and I just was looking at Razor Ramon, and I said, he has to be the coolest mofo that ever stepped in the ring.
100%.
He oozed cool. He oozed, to coin the phrase, he oozed machismo because he was so committed to that. And then going, you know, to WCW as just Scott Hall. But man, it was just his swagger. You felt it through the television. You know what I mean? And that's what I enjoyed most about his. And by the way, he has one of the greatest working punches in the history of the business. Just amazing. But you mentioned it. Talk about merchandise. And like, think about this for a second. If you go to a WWE show, if you go to an AEW show, if you go to an MLW, if you go to Impact, if you go to any wrestling show, you'll see Austin 316 and NWO.
That's right.
Talk about the impact of the merchandise and that they're still selling 28 years later now. Talk about that for a second.
It's just crazy because it became the NWO shirt first and then later the Austin 316 shirt.
Mm-hmm.
They became more than just wrestling shirts. They became, this is just a cool thing to wear if you're a teenager, you're 20 something, it was cool. You know, it was the cool thing to wear in 1997, in 1998, the Wolfpack shirt, you know, the red and black. Yeah, that was just, it was the first time that in like at least the 90s and a lot of people's lifetimes that wrestling was actually cool. Like it was not something that you got made fun of if you were watching it. It became something that everyone was watching and it was pop culture. It was the water cooler talk on a Tuesday morning after the Monday Night War the night before. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it was. And that has really not gone away all that much. The Austin 316 and the NWO shirt are, I mean, I'm wearing my hoodie here. I got this from Hogan's Beach Shop.
Okay.
Down in Clearwater, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a great example of this, Derek. So I bought this when I first started doing the book, when I was trying to track down Hogan in Florida. Didn't really work out in my favor, but I did get the hoodie. So I started to wear this when I traveled to UFC events.
Mm-hmm.
And I wore it a lot at the airport. I wore it in different cities, just as kind of like a social experiment in some ways.
Right.
And I do wear a lot of wrestling shirts anyway, so it really not a big departure from what I would normally be wearing.
Right.
Anyway, so one morning, I'm in LAX and I'm flying to Newark, New Jersey, your hometown.
Okay.
This is last year, 2023, for a UFC show in Newark. And I'm flying to Newark, and it's one of those West Coast to East Coast flights. So I'm gonna be in the air all day pretty much, right? And it's early in the morning. I think it's a 6 a.m. flight. So I'm there. It's like 4 something.
Right.
And I'm tired. And I didn't get much sleep. But I know that I'm already tired. I'm going to a long fight week. And I got a book to write, by the way. So I'm wearing my NWO hoodie. And I'm going through TSA. And as I'm going through TSA, the TSA agent starts humming the NWO theme song as I'm coming through the metal detector.
Rock House. Nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is real. I swear to you that this really happened. I put my bag on the belt. I'm walking through in my NWO hoodie, and this man is freaking singing. He's humming the NWO theme song. And when I come through the metal detector, I get the wolf back. I get the too sweet, right? I mean, like, that's insane. I mean, that is insane. And really, everywhere that I went and I wore this, someone said something. I mean, I would say it's like 80% of the time, if I'm out with this thing somewhere in the country or the world, someone is making a comment about the NWO. And that also extends, by the way, to Japan. I was in Tokyo about a year and a half ago. And I went to a restaurant, and the host, Japanese, did not speak much English, but he remembered the NWO. I mean, this is something special. This is not This is not your regular thing. This is culture. You know, this is people. And that just further inspired me and kind of like made me say, like, all right, I guess I'm doing something right if I'm writing a book about this.
Right. And I mean, there's been times I've worn this T-shirt out. And trust me, if I'm in a mall and I see a guy across the hall, he's like, too sweet.
He's gonna
throw up the
every
sign.
Time, it's right?
Like, it's like, and there was, I was with my best friend and his fiance now. And then that happened in a mall one time. And they're looking at me like, I'm like, you don't understand. It's to your point, it is culture, because that's what we know. That's what we do. You know what I mean?
And 100%.
And that's what I enjoyed most about that time. And think about this for a second. You know, the Bullet Club, you know, in New Japan, they took a lot of that NWO when they throwing up the too sweet. And that T-shirt is another shirt that you see at a lot of indie shows, a lot of Bullet Club. And I think that was an extension of the NWO and the impact. And it was a huge impact, not just in America, but just all over the world.
Yeah, it's just wild, you know, to think that something that happened almost 30 years ago has still had that impact. But that's really the premise for the book, you know, and I know I've said it a few times already, but, you know, it's more than just pro wrestling. The book is about more than just pro wrestling. The NWO was about more than just pro wrestling. There were so many elements of it that elevated it past just your typical pro wrestling storyline, your typical pro wrestling group. It transcended the medium, and it still does today. And that's very much like you said, you go out and more times than not, someone is making a comment on this shirt. I wear a lot of shirts, and I traveled a lot for 11 years covering the UFC. Nobody's making comments about other shirts that I'm wearing, but at the end, they see the NWO shirt. It's just a different level. It is something different. And I tried my best to, you know, do this. Subject matter justice with my writing, and I hopefully I have.
Well, again, ladies and gentlemen, you know, you can get, you know, this book, like I said, you can pre-order it right now. I'll give you that information in just a second. Again, Say Hello to the Bad Guys: How Pro Wrestling's New World Order Changed America. And if you could just tell the people where they can pre-order the book, so they'll have it right and ready in March of 2025.
Yeah, I mean, really anywhere that you pre-order books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, it's on Target's website, which that blew me away actually when I saw it on Target. Like, Target is like, it's Target. So really anywhere you pre-order books, you can Google it. Like the title you said, Say Hello to the Bad Guys, How Pro Wrestling's New World Order Changed America. Also, you can check it out on my social media. My ex, my Twitter is at Mark Ray Mundy, MarkRayMundi. Instagram is Mark Ray Mundy Sports, MarkRayMundi Sports. And it's all on there. The links are on there. A lot of information is on there and will continue to be over the next few months, you know, as we get closer to publish. And yeah, it's, you know, it's just crazy that all, you know, this year, these years of work, it's a passion project, you know, for me. It's finally, like, you know, it's becoming a reality. It's pretty moving, honestly.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I can't wait to
Movie made a call apparently as well.
and as I said, I definitely can't wait to read it. One more thing before we head out. I know you're a beat writer for the Atlanta Falcons. So talk about, your expectations, now that you're writing for the team, now they have Kirk Cousins that just signed a 3-year contract, with the Atlanta Falcons, and they've made some drafted a quarterback in first round, you know what I mean? Everyone was high on. So talk about the realistic expectations going into this football season with the Atlanta Falcons.
I think that a lot of people would say that they are the favorites to win the NFC South. And look, it's been a while since they've had a winning season. 2017 was the last one. Matt Ryan was the quarterback then, and he was the franchise for 14 seasons. And they did not really have a good succession plan for him at quarterback. And I think that really is one of the reasons why they wanted to draft Michael Penix when they did. Even though they just signed Kirk Cousins, it was a big money contract, but quarterback is such an important position, and it really can be the difference between winning and losing in a lot of cases in the NFL these days. That's just how the game has evolved. And they were super high on Michael Penix Jr. They went to his workout. A bunch of coaches went to his workout in Seattle, and they just loved him. They loved him. They loved his arm. They loved his ability, and they loved who he was as a person. Which I've gotten to see a little bit too so far during OTAs and rookie minicamp and veteran minicamp, and he really is a very humble guy, very humble guy. Seems like he's ready to sit and learn for the time being, and learn how to be a leader in the NFL, learn how to be a franchise player possibly in the NFL as Kirk Cousins does his thing. But it was controversial because they did not do anything in the first round with the number 8 pick to make their team better in 2024. So I mean, I understand why that was a polarizing pick, but in 3 or 4 years, if Kirk Cousins has a couple of winning seasons under his belt and then passes the torch to Michael Penix, who is a ready-made possible future franchise quarterback, I think a lot of people are going to be saying like, all right, maybe we were wrong, and the Falcons actually had some prescience, so to speak, and they kind of knew what they were doing all along.
Because to be honest with you, I initially thought, especially during bowl season, I thought that Michael Penix, I thought that that was going to be Chicago that was going to try to that was going to get him. At least from my perspective, again, I don't have as much inside knowledge as you do, but I'm thinking, I said, clearly, I thought he would have been, the number one guy, and when he began to slide down, and then the Falcons, I'm like, whoa, what? That was something I did not see coming.
I think that the whole thing with Michael Penix was that people were afraid of the injury history because he did, I mean, he did have 4 season-ending injuries in college, which is significant, right? But if you talk about skill for skill, there were not many quarterbacks in this draft class better than Michael Penix Jr.
Agreed.
That's just a fact. But a lot of teams kind of got down on the injury stuff and also how he played in the national championship game. They just didn't love how he played in the national championship game either. But again, it's like if you look at the numbers for the last 2 years in NCAA, he was kind of the best quarterback out there in terms of playing on the field. Maybe not in some scout's eyes, but he established himself as a winner for sure in college, and also an incredibly productive player as well on the field. So Falcons loved him. It was a controversial pick, but the cool thing about sports is that we get to find out, right? We get to find out what happens. We don't have to wonder forever. We get to see how it all plays out, and that's the exciting part.
Indeed, and like I said, we've seen some interesting situations. How opportunities come knocking, and then if they're ready, great. And then it, which means, hey, you're not getting your job back, and that's reality. We've seen it so many times throughout the course of history, with especially in the National Football League. But God,
It's a results-based league. I mean, it
agreed.
really, really is. And that's stuff that people have to realize is that it's like if you don't produce, you're gone. You have to produce results year in and year out. I mean, just the reality of it. Bill Belichick, didn't get brought back to New England, and that's a guy that has, a drawer full of championship rings, right? So, I mean, that's just how it is in the NFL.
NFL, not for long, as they say, right?
Indeed. Indeed.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, Say Hello to the Bad Guys, How Pro Wrestling's New World Order Changed America. Again, you could pre-order it, like he said, Amazon, you know, Target, you know, the list. And go, again, go to his social media. You can click the links, order them. Will you be doing any book tours, by the way, before we head out here? Will you be doing any book tours?
That's a great question. I've had discussions about it. There's nothing definitive just yet, but I would say tentatively, I think so, yes.
Well, you definitely have my support on that. I'm definitely going to try my absolute best wherever you are, in close proximity to where I am, to, you know, to ensure that I do, you know, at least support and show up, definitely, because this has been one of the best interviews I had an opportunity to do. And I hope this is not the last. I hope we can do some more interviews in the future, whether it's pro wrestling, football, MMA, the whole nine yards.
100%. Just let me know. Thank you so much, man. I really, really appreciate it.
You got it. Well, that does it for this week's edition of the D-Loop podcast. I want to thank Mark Romani once again for stopping by to talk about his journey in writing this book. And by the way, guys, you can pre-order the book. If you go to Mark's bio and all of his social media, you'll be able to click on those links and purchase, you know, pre-order the book. But you can also get it, you know, at Amazon, which, I mean, everywhere, everything has Amazon, right? So make sure that you place that pre-order and give Mark your full support, because I'll definitely be doing that. And I know that's going to be an incredible, incredible read. Speaking of support, you know, I do appreciate, you know, all of the support you all have been giving me, you know, listening to the podcast, watching the podcast, you know, especially now that I'm doing all video content on YouTube. So make sure that you subscribe to my YouTube channel as The Real DT Lou, or if you look up Derek T. Lewis, and you can just click on the D-Loop podcast and hit subscribe, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and also iHeartRadio. So making sure that you subscribe on there so you can get all new content every Thursday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern. Again, at thedloopodcast.com. You know, of course, you can check out the D-Loop podcast on all platforms, social media-wise. Again, Instagram and Twitter, Facebook, the D-Loop podcast. All you got to do is look for it. Click the follow or like button and you'll get all of the updates of what's going on with the show. You know, my own social media, again, is The Real DT Lou on all platforms, with the exception of Facebook, which is Derek T. Lewis official page. Of course, my stores, my pro wrestling stores, is you can go to pwt.derektlewis.com, as well as my own store with all my own merchandise, with all music and podcasting and things of that nature. It's shop.derektlewis.com. Of course, the music, you know, all my music out, not just Espacion, but Every Second Make It Count, Selfish Pride. Stream all my music on all platforms. And again, I thank you guys for the ones that's continuing to do that. But I'm gonna get out of here, and like I always say, no matter what it is you do in life, always remember to make it count. See you next time.
Let's say your small business has a problem, like maybe one of your doggy daycare customers had an accident. You might say something like,
"Doggone it!
Hi, Chihuahua!
Holy schnauzers!"
But if you need someone who can actually help, just say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And get help filing a claim from your local State Farm agent. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.